When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass. We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
React in a positive way. We need positivity for this second half. Positivity, believe, positivity, believe. 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 Positivity, believe, positivity, believe.
Welcome, listeners, to The Extra Inch. This is the seventh in a series of All or Nothing watch-along specials. My name is Windy, and I'm joined by my psychic and best friend, Bardi. Hello, Bardi.
Hello, Windy.
And our tactics guy, who has no time to touch his balls, Nathan A. Clark. Hello, Nathan.
That's me.
Before we start, I will just plug our Patreon. We launched a Patreon last week, 4.5 days ago. We have 150 sign-ups, so thank you to the ex-subs who have signed up already, who are already the recipients of one of Nathan's famous videos. Plus a bonus episode, access to the Fantasy Football League that we're running, and various blog posts and whatnot. Bardi wrote a lovely blog about guests.
We'll get into that another day, but probably guess.
Here we go. That's the end of the Patreon plug-in for this podcast. Don't want to go too much about it. If you haven't watched episode 7 of Amazon's All or Nothing series about Tottenham Hotspur, we suggest that you do so now if you plan to do so, because we're going to spoil all of that episode. If you've got no intention of watching it, that's fine. Crack on, let us spoil it for you. And if you have watched it, then hopefully this will supplement your viewing. This one is called No Regret. The blurb is 4 months into the job and Jose Mourinho finds himself in the middle of a difficult run of results. With the team facing the knockout stages of two competitions, Academy graduate Harry Winks handed the captain while goalkeeper Michel Vorm gets his first start of the season. With wins hard to come by, friends Deli and Eric Dyer have a full and frank exchange following a loss. And this one covers the time period 19th of February to the 4th of March, which is the Norwich FA Cup game. This one opens on a stadium shot pre-RB Leipzig. It's half-time, 0-0, the players are going down the tunnel, and the opening line is, there is work to do for Tottenham. We see Mourinho making notes in his notebook. Deli comes into the changing room and he says, fucking want the ball, play, fucking smashing it long and defending, stop fucking dogging it. And Nathan, what did he mean by dogging it?
Dogging is when you and your wife drive to, I don't know what he means by that. Is that just launching it long, like dogging the ball, as in, where does that come from? How do you arrive at dogging for sending the ball?
Yeah, I didn't understand the parlance. I was hoping you, as a young person, might be able to explain it to me, an old person. But instead, you've just referenced dogging in relation to a married couple.
You're kind of implying that
me and my wife, I mean, I don't have a wife, so just to clarify, I've never been dogging in my life. No. I have no intention of dogging.
I disagree. Chris is married and him and his wife go dogging every Thursday nights are free now. So
Mourinho stands up and he said, any results if we don't concede goals is a good result. He's very focused on not conceding goals. Very focused on not conceding goals. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah. So there's this comment by Deli who's saying, let's have the ball, let's play with the ball, let's have possession. And then Mourinho's like, well, let's not get carried away, we don't want to concede any goals. Is there like, and again, this is like a matter of editing, but is there like a contrast of ideas there? Or or is that just that's just my kind of cynical reading on it?
I think perhaps the players are still adjusting to his first priority is not to concede goals type mentality. Maybe he tells them to cope after making mistakes. That's something he comes back to time and time again. Cope with the pressure, cope with mistake. And this is where he makes the comment: there is no time to touch your balls. In fact, he makes it twice. So I didn't really understand quite what he meant by that. Bardi, did you have any thoughts?
I've been thinking about Mourinho and his balls quite a lot. And this morning I went for a run with my wife. We went running through the forest, not
to a car park,
not dogging in the forest. And as I was running along to her, so I asked her quite surprisingly about the use of balls and the way it's used in South American and Latin terminology. Then I was also thinking the way the Italians use it as well. And like, you've got to have your balls.
Cajones.
And in the Spanish, cojones. In Colombian Spanish, guevas. You've got to have the guevas to go out and do it. And I was just thinking, Mourinho, his obsession with balls, I think it's one of those really bad examples of translating how you would speak in Latin, in a Latin language, reverting it to English. And it just seems really bad. And I, like my wife said, that her and her friends would use the term balls, like let's do it, who's got the balls to do this, whereas we in English would say, have you got the guts, have you got the stomach for it. So then I asked her, would you say you've got the guts or the stomach for it, and she was like, no, it's just not something we would do. So I'm not defending the use of balls, I don't agree with the use of balls as a way, but I think it's Mourinho's literal translation of how he would talk in Portuguese or when even in Spanish or Italian, is they're very much balls focused. But getting back away from his balls into the football we were whacking at Delhi, I thought they edited that clip really well, that it made it seem like we actually had a chance against Leipzig, whereas we were pretty much punished for the whole match. And getting out losing just 1-0 was an absolutely cracking result. So so that was me defending the balls and talking about some really good editing by Amazon there.
So we see Delhi put the ball down on the centre circle and the credits roll. It restarts on the match highlights. There is some mischance Spurs before Ben Davis concedes a penalty, which Werner scores. There were an unusual amount of match highlights, I thought, relative to the rest of the show. Quite lengthy highlights for this one, for a 1-0, a fairly predictable 1-0. We're then back at the training ground. Daniel Levy's on the phone whilst the player's training, the implication being he's trying to get deals done, I think. And Levy says it's difficult for a manager to arrive mid-season. He explains how far we've fallen, you know, going from the Champions League final to the largest net spend. He's happy to get the net spend in there. And he mentions how Pochettino is no longer with us. We've had injuries. He says we've underperformed to date relative to the quality in our squad, but we still have 25% of the season left to play. It's very kind of numbers man way of looking at things. I've never heard of the season broken down into fractions or percentage for. Bardi, what did you think of Levy here?
It's very much going into a development review at work, talking about the stuff you've done and trying to defend what you haven't done, then saying, oh, I can get the rest of this done in the rest of my year.
Let's try and achieve these objectives in quarter four.
Exactly. Your manager's being very positive, but a lot of it is Levy defending himself and trying to give reasons for the problems that we're facing.
Yeah, agreed. He says we have to have a highly competitive team. We have to play with style. Interestingly, he focused on that. And we have to challenge every competition that we're in to the very best. Yeah, he doesn't seriously believe that. I mean, I think it's probably something he has to say. He knows we have to prioritise certain competitions over others. During this section, Mourinho is then writing on a tactics notepad. And the two things that I've picked out, I'm interested to hear what you guys have got, are firstly that Ryan Sessegnon is listed as Deputy Son on the left. Bergwijn is not listed at all at that point, so I thought the clip must have actually been pre-Bergwijn's arrival. They're printed pads, by the way, with the names are pre-printed, not written. And the other thing was that Wanyama is listed as the first name of the central midfielder on the right, with Sissoko and Skip beneath him, which I thought was intriguing. Did either of you pick up anything from that tact pad?
I missed this visual. There was a notepad earlier in the episode, like right at the beginning of the Leipzig one, and it's just like complete gibberish. There's the vague semblance of some, I believe, English words written there, but like it's really doctor's handwriting.
It looks like shorthand.
There might be shorthand. Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
I thought it was shorthand.
I was getting to the point with that where I'm giving up trying to read what the hell he's writing at any time. It took me ages and ages and ages in a previous episode to recognise where he'd written Winks and Lo Celso, where obviously Winks and Lo Celso would be on a tactics board. So I struggle with his handwriting. Mm. The Wan Yama one's interesting because it's like, yeah, if the club were like one of a handful of teams in the background that you weren't paying much attention to in the past, you might go, well, this team clearly needs a defensive midfielder, and they do have Wan Yama, who was really good a couple of years ago, so I'll go in and I'll get him playing, and then you arrive at the club and you realise that his knees have exploded entirely and he can't run anymore. And he's just, Wan Yama throughout the documentary is just this like extra. He's just like, he has cameo appearances in social scenes, but it's like never referred to, never acknowledged. His transfer is not part of the story. He's never like acknowledged by name. He's just like a guy who hangs out at the club if you're like not an actual fan at Spurs. He's like, oh, who's that face?
Even Alfie Whiteman's had talking parts now. So Levy says that Mourinho has been a class act. He's obsessed in a positive way with winning. Says, I'm not sure if it is that positive for Mourinho's mental health, but there we go. We have another defeat, this time against Chelsea. Massively glossed over. Just it's happened and that's it. There's no focus on that. I thought that was intriguing. And we're back in the tactics room. Mourinho and his staff are trying to engage the players. What they've done is put a video in the dressing room on loop of all of the goals conceded. But some of the players have switched off the video. And he's doing this thing where he's laughing about it, but he's clearly a bit pissed off. But he moves on quickly. Sorry, Bardi, go on.
Yeah, I mean, I think, did you make one of those videos where it showed all our goals which we've conceded, or did you share it? Because it's pretty hard to watch, and I mean, it's not me they're having digs at, so I can imagine how difficult it was to sit through all of that.
There was a video along those lines going around about like defensive errors at the end of last season or something. Mm. Complaining about the players. This was clearly like a trap, right? He's looking for a specific reaction of them, you know, looking away or turning off the TV, which is of course what you would do, so that he can then dig them out for that and saying, you know, you've got to take responsibility. Like it's a bit lame. It's a bit of an obvious sort of setup to which, you know, human beings had a very human reaction, but whatever.
My main takeaway was that it's not very positivity belief. It's more sure. Kind of you're instilling the negatives there. His whole mantra is just constantly like bigging them up, telling them to believe, telling them to be positive, cope with pressure and be better and go and do better. So you'd think he'd be showing more uplifting videos. Bardi, what did you think?
I mean, I think this is the first time where Mourinho's actually spoken about players' positioning and where they are on the pitch and communicating with each other other than just kind of shouting at each other and G-ing each other up. So I think it was nice. I think it's probably the most tactical episode we've had so far, and it's just basically talking about occupying space and stuff. But I can see why he did it, and I thought it was one of the more insightful things we've seen from Mourinho talking to the team.
For sure, and the bit you reference is the bit that follows, which is this continued team meeting where he highlights the goals conceded against RB Leipzig and Chelsea, where he's basically saying that mistakes did happen, but it wasn't the individuals who seemed to be at fault who were necessarily at fault. There are other errors within those moves. What did you think of this, Nathan?
Yeah, so it's interesting that this was maybe the most tactically interesting revealing episode, because what we learned very recently in an interview with Sky is that Mourinho acknowledged that he told Amazon not to show his tactical ideas. Mm. He told them he had an arrangement with Amazon that he would, you know, allow them to be in the dressing room, etc. as long as they didn't make the documentary interesting, as far as I'm concerned. But we are getting a little bit, but it's also like when you do see some of the more tactical stuff, it's dressed up in the idea of, you know, you're not trying hard enough, you're not giving it all for the team, you're not being switched on, when actually it is that, but it's also awareness of space, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yep, absolutely. We see Ben Davis talking about Mourinho being the kind of manager who tells you straight, and Davis says that he wants to work for a manager who tells you this is what you do, which I found quite interesting. Everyone's got different learning styles. Some people like to be told specifically you need to do X, Y, or Z better. Others like to be shown how to do things. Others like sort of more subtle feedback. What's your learning style, Bardi? regarding?
Probably kind of making mistakes and then learning from it that way. And yeah, trying to self-teach myself from making errors, always trying to improve. I fully believe in making mistakes and getting better that way. Can't do everything perfect. I think Ben Davies has been excellent throughout this, and I've enjoyed his little kind of insightful talks and pieces to camera. I think he's come across very well as a guy and as someone who thinks a little bit differently about football.
Mm-hmm. Definitely agree. We see Adverald saying that there's more pressure on us with Mourinho's style, meaning the players. He says if you want to achieve things, you have to work a team. We see Sacramento showing how the front four have to contribute to defence, but again, you know, parroting what Mourinho's been saying, that they have to put in extra effort. Mourinho says it's not just the tactical organisation, it's not just the game plan, it's also a state of mind. It's only possible when the team defends well, and really to have pleasure in playing for the clean sheet the same way you have pleasure to score goals. Nathan, do you have take as much pleasure from clean sheets as you do for scoring goals?
I mean, you know, none of it is wrong. Like, that's all, of course that's true, and of course that's been an issue this season. It's just like, that's not unique to Jose Mourinho. That's not unique to any football club. That's not unique to any tactical style. But I feel like there's this implication that there is, that this is something that these players are learning for the first time, which grates with me a little bit.
I mean, we had some fantastic defensive records under Pochettino before it all went tits up. So next we have an academy section, which obviously I was very, very pleased to see. Levy introduces the project of the academy, saying we need to have a production line of players to add sustainability. He introduces the world-class facility, as I've heard it called so many times. He says the next part of Jigsaw is how you get that talent potentially into the first.
And not in Portugal and scattered elsewhere across Europe.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
And Harry Winks is introduced as a player who has come through the academy. And we see him signing, being absolutely adorable with a boy who appears to have Down syndrome. And that's really lovely. We see Mourinho talking to Daniel Levy. He talks about how much Harry Winks has improved. He used to pass laterally a lot, but improved in that. And Levy is just absolutely flabbergasted at how much Harry Winks runs, which I found really amusing. And he's like, yeah, he must run a lot. He runs a fine amount. That's definitely a thing central midfielders do. Winks is talking about how his dad was a semi-pro, was a Spurs fan. He talks through his first memory of going to watch Spurs playing against Middlesbrough. He speaks about the emotional attachment for him coming through the academy as a Spurs fan, where he says that, you know, winning is better for him, but losing is worse because he's got that emotional attachment. He talks through his first England cap, where he says, I was absolutely shitting myself, to be honest, which is definitely going to become a reusable meme. And then we see Winks and Gary Mabberts walking into what appears to be a day centre or a care home. And I absolutely loved this section in terms of like being one of the better instances of the propaganda PR machine. I thought Harry Winks was a complete and utter natural at communicating with older people. He just seemed like he threw himself straight into challenge and was really genuine, really natural with them. And there was this lovely moment where one of the ladies says, you're gorgeous, Harry. And he kind of doesn't quite know where to look. And he says something like, you are too, or something yeah, like that. It's really sweet. Nathan, how did you find this section?
I'm really, really bad at like holding conversations with children, holding conversations with older people, holding conversations with people with special needs. So I'm always really impressed when I see someone handling it just fine. I'm always horrified and worried I'm going to do something terrible and say the wrong thing or be rude or drop the baby or whatever. So I'm impressive.
he just seems like a very sort of gregarious, pleasant person in this situation. I used to volunteer for Age UK, and the older generation are not always that easy to communicate with, sometimes because they can't always understand what you're saying, because they can't necessarily hear you particularly well, and you know, they don't always understand the context when you're talking about things. There are huge differences here. Winx is young, and this lady's probably in her 70s or 80s. He does a great job. He's just absolutely lovely. Mm. Bardi, what did you think?
I can't believe how fully coised that old people's home is. They all support Spurs. They all used to go to the games.
I want to end my days there.
Yeah, can you imagine just throwing their plates at the table when we lose? It'd be brilliant. Just throwing your nappy at the properly losing your shit. Not like Coy's Twitter does, like properly, isn't it? I thought it was really sweet. I loved the bit with the old boot and the new boot. And
oh,
yeah,
that was cool,
The bit where, oh, you're gorgeous. It was really nice. And you could see how much it means to him and how much Tottenham is, how much it means to his family. And no one celebrates Tottenham goals quite like Harry Winks. I think there's a few videos going around that lose mine.
I'm picturing the three of us in this old folks home together when we're ripe and old, nattering away about the old times as Spurs. Me with a box full of prints out of tactic sheets, just boring the hell out of some young lad who's come to visit over. Back in my day, what we used to do was...
Football's changed. In my day, yeah, it was totally different. We didn't have these virtual reality things. We had notepads and laptops.
Yeah.
I remember when pressing was invented.
yeah.
We then see the Wolves game. So Winx is captain for this game. So you can see why they've decided to slot in this Harry Winx section here. His team talk seems to be, they played 3 days ago, so let's fucking press them.
And sometimes when you look at these guys who are captain and they've got to give these kind of monumental speeches, like how good they are with timing and everything else like that. But Winx starts his speech just as the bell goes off.
Yeah.
That never happened to Harry. Harry was always there ready, dropping the F-bombs before the bell. Winx, you can't hear him. He's like, Winx,
drowned out
mute.
By the bell.
Yeah, you're on mute, mate. We can't hear you.
Bless him. The inexperience of captaincy just caught him off guard. So we're 2-1 up at half time in this game where Doherty scored for Wolves. And Winks comes in, he says, brilliant, keep that fucking intensity. Mourinho says, there are no tactical problems, we're in control, but we made mistakes. We need to kill mistakes. This is his thing, cannot make mistakes. And he talks about how fast Wolves are on transitions, how intense they are. They're going to keep up the intensity. He says, we cannot be caught out in counter-attack by position. He talks about Tanganga and Davis essentially doubling up on the left as two left-backs because he says Wolves have two right-wingers. Kyoto makes it 2-2 before Jimenez curls in a winner. It's a really frustrating defeat, this one. And Deli's walking down the tunnel with a face like thunder. He says, three of the worst goals I've ever seen in my life. And Dyer calls him out in the dressing room for his moans and saying, you know, put a name on it. If you're going to call us out, tell us who's doing what wrong in your opinion. And Deli's like, it's the whole team, do you want me to list the whole team out? And they end up having a bit of an argument about it. It's, you know, it's nothing too vicious, but just a falling out, I suppose. Nathan, what did you think of that?
This is really interesting. Obviously people sort of deal with defeat and process it in different ways, and you can see the clash of coping mechanisms here between the two of them. And they do definitely argue in the way that friends who deeply care for each other do, and that they're very comfortable being very direct and honest with each other when they do clash. But I guess I'm more in Dyer's camp. I completely understand that the way some people would deal with that is to vocalize their frustrations as a means of processing it. But if you're in the room with him, and also if like you're a defender and he's an attacker and he's saying, why do we, fucking we keep conceding these shit goals, and like you're the center half, you can see it. If I think from Dyer's perspective, it feels very performative from Deli. It feels very, Dyer makes it clear that Deli is a sort of implying through the vocalization of his frustration that it's not his fault, that he has the right to be frustrated at others. And that's why he's being so vocal with his frustration, because other people have let him down. That's not necessarily the way that Deli means it, but it's very understandable how Dyer would see it that way, which is what leads to that conversation. This is more of sort of the stuff I'm more interested in. I've seen the documentary, which is something real, something behind the scenes and genuine and honest.
Mourinho tells them that he's pleased they've reacted like this. He says that the reason we lost is that we are two good guys, and I think what he means by that is that we're too nice. Another saying, we're too nice to collect. And he talks about Wolves making fouls to stop transitions. Again, that's something we've seen him hint at before. He says the goals are all transitions. You have to be nasty, you have to be aggressive, you have to be clever, you have to make the foul. How do you feel about that? But Bardi, do you think that's the only reason we were losing?
I think this is probably a problem with Spurs for quite some time now. We do allow teams to get through us, and all three goals were part of that. Had there been a foul earlier on in the attack, it would never have happened. And I think we see that when we played Red Bull away, and we see it quite often from the better teams, that they don't allow an attack to build, whereas Spurs, we seem to always defend the attack right at the end of it, right in front of our goal, instead of stopping it earlier on. I think Jose is very right to call that out, and I think it's something that we need to improve on. I think moving through the documentary, I do see us picking up more yellow cards, and perhaps we do learn from that.
I don't agree. We've committed our fair share of, maybe not last season, but going back over the last 5 years, we've committed a lot of tactical fouls and picked up a lot of yellow cards. Maybe more historically, maybe going back further than that. But this is a continuation of the same thing about us being too nice. I really struggle with the idea of it, because I'm not that convinced it's true.
Yeah, I agree. I don't believe in the whole nice thing, but I think there's plenty of goals where we can see them from a situation that we could have stopped earlier on, had a tactical foul, which is not necessarily about being a bad person or being a nice person, just being a smarter person. And I think this niceness is about Tottenham trying to be smarter than just being big bullies.
We see Dele and Dier talking about how they cope with losses. Dier says he can't switch off from a defeat, he plays it over and over in his mind. Then we see the first team accommodation at the lodge, where Dier, Sessegnon, Bergwijn and Dele are playing FIFA, and Dele is feeding Dier Haribo, which was really quite amusing. In the voiceover, you have Dele saying, "I feel like my teammates here are just like a family, and I'd call every one of them my friend." And Dier saying, "If I have a good connection with people off the pitch, I feel like our connection on it is so much better." That I found that interesting, because on the one hand, you've got Dier saying, "If I have a good connection with my teammates, I'm better on the pitch," whereas Mourinho is sort of trying to tell them to get into each other all the time, which is presumably going to disrupt that good connection to some degree. So a bit of an interesting tension there. Dier sort of jokingly storms out of the game of FIFA. Who was it? Was it Dier? I forget who it was that says they don't play FIFA at home. I think it was Dier says, "I don't play FIFA at home, but I always come and bring my game or something," and he's expected to win, and then he just loses.
Yeah, he gets pumped.
That's very Eric Dier all around, I think. You know, he knows that he's about to lose, and he's playing up because he's making good fun of it. It's a really good scene. Obviously,
cool.
We'd seen most of this scene, I think, before. They sort of did it as a teaser trailer thing. It's really nice, you know, placement after the argument. You see them, you know, being best mates.
For sure. We see Sacramento go to see Jan Vertonghen in the canteen, and he asks why the team is conceding so many goals, and Vertonghen says, "We're missing a trigger," which I thought was quite interesting. And Sacramento just sort of seems to stare into space. It doesn't add anything, doesn't imply anything. You know, maybe that's one of those circumstances where Mourinho's agreement not to show tactics played out.
Yeah, I think so. Maybe. I think so. I don't think the response to a tactical question is silence from the assistant manager.
It was
if
weird.
It is, then
I think we learn a little bit there. We miss from Vertonghen. Maybe the trigger is we lack that kind of defensive midfielder to organise the team in front of the defence. Maybe it's a point towards that as well. But yeah, it was a strange clip throwing.
So my takeaway from that is that the word trigger is quite a specialist word in football, and that someone who's using the word trigger, particularly someone who speaks English as second language, is probably referring to pressing trigger. That was my inference on that, but I could be wrong.
I completely strongly agree. It's not necessarily a press. It could be like when the line steps up, it could be when the line drops deep, it could be centre backs moving into wide areas, whatever. It's a trigger for a specific action. It's a tactical question, to which we are then cut to a clip of Sacramento staring in space. I don't think that was his response.
Then we have Sacramento talking about what it's like after a defeat, and he says it's a week of work gone. It's the moment where you need to reflect about what happened. So he's there to sort of analyse all the bad things and tell the team how to improve on that next time round, which happens to be the FA Cup against Norwich. Yay! We see Mourinho telling Winks not to vacate his space in the midfield. He's basically saying, you know, if you drift wide, the problems form. We see Vorm and Lloris and Lamela watching training and enjoying it. Vorm is playing in this game, and he is surprised. He's surprised he's playing. He says 14 months and it's long.
I mean,
this entire section is Vorm going, why am I playing this game? Why have I been selected? He's literally, there's a clear implication that he's saying, look, guys, my playing days are over. I'm really just here to train, pick up a check and maybe transition into coaching. I'm not sure what you're expecting from me on the pitch here. There's no like, yes, finally I'm getting a game. I've been waiting for this for so long. There's no like, I'm gonna make second place my own. I'm looking forward to being in the cups next season. It's like, yeah, for some reason they want me to play this game.
That's Vorm's take, but Nuno Santos's take is that Michel has to play because he's able to offer something different.
No, I'm losing all faith in Santos. He shows the penalty save again. I'm losing all faith in him. And Vorm was surprised. You know, it's such a bad state of affairs when a professional player is surprised they're going to be starting the game. It's ridiculous. I can't even get why they did it.
You can imagine the conversation where Santos approached Michel Vorm and said, Michel, I'm planning to play you in the next game. He probably assumes it's a wind-up. He probably assumes, like, me, for real. But we've got Paulo. He's fine. He's the backup.
He's not fine. He's rubbish as well, but he's not as rubbish. Yeah. I don't even know why they showed that clip, because all it does is just lays bare the stupidity of that decision. And we, as we go to learn, it ultimately cost us.
So I think this whole documentary has been a bit of a puff, right? Been very pro, sure. Been very pro Spurs.
No, Windy.
However, this section is absolutely savage because you get fans talking about winning a trophy. You get Mourinho saying, you know, we need good energy, Dyer, be aggressive. Vertonghen, this has to be our tournament. And you're like, they're really bigging this up. They really like, are we going to win the cup here? Is Spurs going to, that's what you'd be thinking if you were someone who doesn't follow football. They're actually going to do it. Like, this genius is going to come into the club. He always wins a trophy in his first season. He's actually going to do it with his completely broken squad. So obviously, knowing what happens, this really felt like they went to town on the pre-match stuff. It's 1-0 through Vertonghen. Mourinho stays in his seat. I remember Mourinho didn't celebrate that goal. He perhaps knew that too early to be getting excited. We see Vorm with some dodgy handling, which there's more of that later. It's half time, and Mourinho says, we were almost collapsing, almost, but we didn't. He tells them again that they need to cope. He tells them to score to kill the game. But if the goal doesn't come, you don't concede. And then, of course, Michel Vorm spills one and Dermot scores the rebound. You get a flash forward of Vorm talking about how disappointing it was. He said, it's such a delicate position, goalkeeper. And he said, in your mind, you feel alone. I thought we've sort of had a few bits of goalkeepers talking about the pressures on that position throughout this. Yeah, I mean, it really does hammer it home. We all know it, but it really does hammer it home. It's insane. You can make 10 good saves. I think Vorm says this. You can make 10 good saves and then you make one mistake and that's the one that's going to cost you a goal and be remembered. And it is tough. And for him to say, in your mind, you feel alone, just mental pressure must be insane. The psychological burden you're having to carry after a mistake as a goalkeeper is next level. Back to the match, and we have extra time. We have penalties. It was horrendous reliving these penalties again. I remember very well watching them the first time around. I didn't need them again, frankly, but no. The documentary goes into a lot of detail. Poor Jedson with his weird stuttery run-up, and then the camera just focuses on him with the Norwich bench behind him going mad, and he just looks broken. Dyer hugs him, and Lamela is once again kicking off in the dressing room as ever. And then, of course, the big incident from that day. Eric Dyer runs towards the stands, and you know, we know how it pans out, but the coaching team discussing it, and Sacramento is watching a video of the incident in the coaching room. He says, he lost his brain, eh? You cannot do that. Moves down to the dressing room, and Dyer's there saying, fucking bellend. I don't know if he's talking about I presume he's talking about the bloke who confronted his brother, but perhaps he's talking about himself. And Vorm tells Dyer that his brother's in there and asks if he's okay. And Dyer says what happened. He explains that he was looking for his brother, and there was a guy a couple of rows in front of his brother shouting abuse. And he's just like, these people think they can say what they like and it's okay, kind of thing. We were very much Team Dyer on this whole issue, but it made us love him even more. It was brilliant seeing this kind of raw emotion straight after the incident. Barty, what did you think?
Yeah, it was good to get, I mean, we kind of guessed what happened, but it was good to get some context on it because Spurs didn't really talk in depth about it and we didn't really hear much about it other than the rumours and everything else. And I still agree, I still agree with what Sacramento says, you can't do that, eh? I still, as much as I back Dyer, there is still a line and you're still a professional. I think it probably happens, but I don't think you'd see an actor on the West End just charge into the crowd and start lumping someone if they were terrible. I love Eric Dyer. passion for that. I mean, but it's still completely wrong, but it was great to get the human side of it.
And we have Mourinho in the press conference after the incident. And I must admit, it reminded me of just how well he handled that. I really thought his response to the media were excellent. However, the bit we did see, which we hadn't seen before, was as he walks out, he says, but he did wrong. And that is the final word of this episode. Nathan, thoughts on the incident and Mourinho's handling?
Well, he's doing the double speak thing, which is growing to be a consistent theme throughout the show. But he's doing it here in the media facing capacity, where he's saying, look, Eric Dier did what we all would have done. Eric Dier did the completely immoral thing. Eric Dier did a very reasonable and understandable thing. But technically, professionally, as my job, I have to say the words, what he did was wrong, because otherwise I'll get in trouble with the FA. So I'd have done it, you'd have done it. It was the right thing to do. Also, it was the wrong thing to do.
I found this episode such a slog. It was just basically 45 minutes, perhaps more, of us losing and being shit and being angry and being upset and fighting fans. And I think the thing that struck me throughout this episode was the sort of lack of obvious guidance from the coaching staff. But Sacramento is portrayed here, and again, I reiterate, it could be that the tactic staff are stripped up. He's being portrayed as being a bit short of ideas, when perhaps we need someone like him the most. He's the younger guy. He's the man that's meant to be integrating with the squad, getting to know them, and being Mourinho's link with the squad. And he just seems to come up a bit short, whereas Mourinho is just focused solely on mentality, trying harder, not conceding. But where's the plan for if you do concede? Where's the plan for what happens if there's a problem, right? And again, maybe that's all stripped out and we're not privy to it, but that's the way it comes across in the kind of the way that the narrative plays out. On the plus side, thoroughly enjoyed Harry Winks doing all of his PR duty. He seems like a really nice person, and that was great. Barney, what did you think?
I mean, this was never going to be a good episode, where we kind of face the fact that our season is falling apart and the only thing we were clinging on to was the FA Cup. But yeah, it was painful, and it kind of sums up when you've got Dier and Dele fighting, and Dier fighting fans, and everybody wanting to punch each other. And it was hard to watch. But I did enjoy the bit where we were talking about the goals we conceded. I thought that was at last a little bit of insight. But Sacramento really didn't come out of this well. Sat in the changing room, his legs wide open, talking about a week of work gone. What work? What have you done other than just stare into space?
You literally asked Tongan what to do.
Yeah, it would be nice if we could see a glimpse of this work. You don't have to reference the player, you don't even have to reference the team, but just something to show how they train at the lodge, with an idea of who they're playing next. We did see the doubling up of Davies and Tanganga, which is an insight. There's no need to worry about a striker because they've got two right wingers, so go there. Don't worry about being pushed into the fullback side. So why can't we see some of this? Like, how was Tanganga prepared to play against Mane? You know, I mean, what's the damage in showing us that? But yeah, so I mean, I'm clutching at straws to find good things in this episode. That's...
How about you, Nathan? Any thoughts?
I mean, I watched all three episodes together last night. They've sort of blended together. I have thoughts on the experience as a whole, but I guess I probably want to save them for the final episode.
Okay, so we shall leave it there. You've been listening to The Extra Inch. Thanks to Nathan A. Clark for production. Thanks to Bardi for being Italian. Thanks to Adam Gardner for the artwork. Thanks to David Lindmer for our intro music. You can find him on Twitter at Davey Shambles and his SoundCloud, D. Lindmer. Do check him out, he's great. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at The Extra Inch. Email us via podcast@theextrainch.co.uk and subscribe via your usual podcast platforms. And if you do enjoy the podcast, consider leaving us a rating and review. That would really help.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Want your most burning finance and investing questions answered? Here's a podcast you should be listening to, courtesy of Acast Recommends.
Are you ready for some personality in your personal finances? Hi, I'm Janice Torres Rodriguez, Latina money expert and host of the award-winning podcast, Yo Quiero Dinero. On this show, we're serving up POC-friendly personal finance knowledge, always with a side of sass.
We're not talking about avocado toast and lattes on this show. We've got real, relatable personal finance knowledge that makes you feel seen, heard, and finally understood. Consider me your super cool, slightly risque, but always honest financial fairy godmother. Together, we'll tackle dinero in a fresh new way so you can finally become poderosa with your dinero. Check out our weekly podcast episodes at YoQuieroDineroPodcast.com or subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.